Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to another edition of False Count Radio. As always, I am your host, the Pacific Coast player, JT Evans. And tonight, on the line with me, I have our newest co-host. He is the outsider, Andrew Carluck. Tonight, Andrew, we are supposed to be joined by a true wrestling icon. And by icon, I do mean somebody that has done it all and been in almost every company. Actually, you know, if you think about it, he has been in all of the big ones. He's been in ECW, WCW, WWE, and TNA, and he's supposed to be joining us in just a few minutes, and that being Kid Cash. So I'm looking forward to the interview. What about you, man?
Yeah, it sounds like a good interview. Like you said, Kid Cash has done it all, so definitely look forward to listening to what he has to say.
Oh, yeah, it's going to be a phenomenal interview, and of course, you know, we are going to be having another episode here tonight, a little bit after this one goes off the air, and it's going to be joined by Balls Mahoney. He's going to be joining us as well later on tonight, so you're going to have to stay tuned to the False Count Radio Facebook page for more information on when that show will air, but we are going to go ahead and try and get Kid Cash on here in just a second. But, you know, I kind of wanted to touch down a little bit more on the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. I mean, there's been numerous reports all over the internet. It looks like there's about 24 names that have been confirmed to be a part of it. Have you had a chance to look over that list at all?
Yeah, and it looks like definitely they're going for a lot of the old school, the old ECW guys. You know, we know Sandman was at the tapings last night, so that's
He actually, at the end of the taping, I'm not going to spoil it too much, but he does make an appearance from what I've read.
Right. You know, me personally, I think that's kind of like spoiling it a little bit, because Sandman is definitely one of the guys that people would most look forward to seeing, and it would just be huge if he were to if it was like a surprise appearance on his part. Luckily, it seems like that's what they're doing with the majority of the guys, is so it's a lot of surprises, which is kind of how a pay-per-view like this should be.
You know, I totally agree with you on that. You know, there's a lot of surprises that should be dealt out. They've already, you know, announced one match for the pay-per-view, but there's got to be a lot more surprises.
Yeah, I mean, I can definitely see them doing that with a lot of the, maybe not the main event guys from ECW, you know, maybe the Blue World Order or FBI, maybe New Jack, people like that, if they were to be there to sort of let them just show up.
All right, let's go ahead and go to a quick commercial break while we get Kid Cash on the line. Or not. Are we going to go to a commercial break?
I'm trying. I'm having an error with my commercial.
Don't even worry about it. Let's actually just let's go ahead and kick that call onto the line, and let's do this. All right, did you answer the call now?
You're talking about the guy we were talking to earlier?
No. All right. There should be a 911 on the line. Go ahead and get it on. And without further ado, let's welcome to the air former ECW, WWE, WCW, TNA superstar, Kid Cash. Kid Cash, how are you doing tonight?
Good. How are you?
Doing great, man. You know, looking forward to talking to you about, you know, your full career. And, of course, currently you're doing mixed martial arts. How's that going for you, man?
Everything is going well. Got some good coaches and a good little team I'm training with, and just taking one day at a time and learning a lot of new stuff and practicing a lot of old stuff. So it's I'm enjoying every minute.
That's awesome. It's nice to see another professional wrestler kind of take that turn into MMA. Of course, we've seen Bobby Lashley and Brock Lesnar take the turn into MMA, and now yourself. Who's one person that you'd like to face that's currently in either UFC or maybe Strikeforce?
Well, if I was in his weight class, I'd like to fight Faber, but I'm a little heavier than him, but, just watching some of his stuff last night, just admire his explosiveness and, you know, his just, he stays on you. That's the kind of fighter, you know, that I am whenever I'm doing MMA. I just keep moving and keep staying on you and stuff. So, but there's always things you need to learn. I don't know. I'd like to take on that, what's his name, Diego Sanchez once and see how that goes.
Now, that would actually be a tremendous fight. You know, of course, I've seen you in professional wrestling, and I can just imagine how you are in MMA. So, you know, I wanted to talk, you know, about pretty much your whole career. And growing up, were you a professional wrestling fan? If so, who were your favorites?
I mean, I was, but I wasn't, like, a huge fan. I mean, if it was on, I would watch it. I mean, there's probably, like, a span of time as a teenager. You know, I might have watched it for, like, a year or two, but it wasn't, like, very religiously, you know. If I was at home at the time, then I would watch it. If not, then I didn't worry about it or think about it. But when I did watch it, I mean, I grew up in the 80s and stuff like that, so I was like Wahoo McDaniels back in the day, who wound up being the first person I ever wrestled. Then I watched the Rock and Roll Express, of course, you know, who trained me and got me in the business. And then there was Ricky Steamboats and the Arn Andersons and, you know, those kind of guys. And then more to like Dynamite Kid. Those are the styles that I like, though. You know, I watched all of those guys, and those guys were my favorite, but when it came down to wanting my style or in my way of working, I kind of followed in different areas, you know, like different wrestlers like Dynamite Kid and Benoit style, you know, more of an aggressive type, even as a babyface, still being aggressive, but also using the selling as of a Ricky Steamboat or a Ricky Morton, you know, or even a Shawn Michaels, and then using technical moves, you know, like Bret Hart would do, precision, you know. So those are the guys that I kind of like looked up to and actually pulled pieces of and followed and created Kid Cash.
Nice. Now you actually brought up, you know, Ricky Morton. What was it like training with him?
Honestly, I never really ever got trained. You know, I just never got in the ring and went to a school or anything. I was fighting MMA years and years ago, and I just happened to meet Ricky, and we talked and just really hit it off. He gave me his number, and I never really used it, you know. About a year went by, and I was wondering, you know, I'd like to give it a shot, you know, see what it was all about. The fighting was doing pretty good, you know, but back in the late 80s, early 90s, you know, it didn't really pay that well. I mean, you know, it did if you won, but it really wasn't as over as it is now, you know. So I tried out the wrestling. I gave Ricky a call, and actually I went to a local show where I was at, and I was watching the guys, and it was horrible. And I was like, even as a wrestling fan, I know what's right and what's wrong, and this is totally wrong, you know. So I wound up calling Ricky, and come to find out we only lived about 3 hours from each other. And so every Thursday I would drive down and meet up with him, and kind of went from there. Just got in the back seat, and him and Robert, him and Tracy Smothers, him and Jerry Lawler, Billy Travis, you know, all these other guys. Every week it was always somebody new, you know. And I just sit back and listen to them. I watched their matches. I sold their gimmicks, their merchandise, carried their bags, just did all of that. And they would quiz me, ask me questions, you know, that kind of stuff. Ask me if I was paying attention to this and paying attention to that. And sometimes before a show, we would get in and they would show me a few lockup holds and, you know, just little things like that. But then one night I was just put on the spot and I learned how to wrestle really technically in one night was just filling a spot and wrestling Wahoo McDaniels. And man, that basically, it totally changed my life, you know. It totally changed my life. It really did. He beat the ever living hell out of me, you know, and he broke my ankle, you know, with a spinning toe hold. But it just taught me so much. You know, even though it was a bad experience, it wound up being a good experience.
Definitely. That sounds like a match that I would want to see. Now, you know, you brought up, of course, you paid your dues the old school way. What do you think of the way that people are trained nowadays, how they're just kind of pushed in a school and pushed out of a school right onto the scene?
Yeah, well, there's on the independent level, you're basically opening, I don't know, I don't understand it myself. If you've never been anywhere or been to the top of anything, I mean, I really don't see how you can open up a wrestling school, you know. And basically, that's just a way for promoters who have wrestling schools and they promote wrestling shows to get out of, you know, like a lot of overhead.
Mm-hmm.
You know, train the guys, put them over on their shows, make them that, and then never pay them, you know. But you'll see that, you know, in their work. Believe it or not, they might be good, but nobody yet on the indies that I've found has what we call a clue. And, you know, it's just because they don't pay their dues anymore. You know, back in the day, you had to be good to be on a show. If you weren't good, then you watched, you know. And that's basically how it went. But it doesn't happen that way anymore. Too many friends, training friends, you know, and running shows and killing the business, you know. But if you're in WWE, you don't really fight for, you know, a position like you used to, or even TNA. You know, you got wrestling, you know, their wrestling schools like WWE's training camp and stuff. That's basically how you get into the business with them. You know, you have to go to their school now and basically be trained in the style that they want you to wrestle in, and then, you know, they take it from there.
Apparently, Casey Carnage wants me to tell you that Casey has a clue.
What's that?
Oh, Casey Carnage wanted me to tell you that Casey has a clue, he says.
Casey has a clue. Well, I'll have to find out one day.
How did you initially get involved with Extreme Championship Wrestling?
Rob Van Dam. I've known Rob for a very long time, and we just were always cool with each other from the first time we ever met. And I wouldn't say we're like the best friends, you know, in the world, but he's actually, you know, been one of the guys who's, you know, looked out after me and stuff. You know, I guess he respects my wrestling ability. You know, I'm not 6'5", 300 pounds, you know, I'm only, you know, 5'10", and, you know, a legit 185. You know, so I'm never going to be a major, major superstar, but my talent speaks for itself, you know. So, you know, he's always looked out after me in that sense. And we met, like I said, years ago, early 90s, about 1995. He calls me up one day, and he was telling me to turn to this certain channel. So I turned to the channel, and it was ECW. And he said, "What do you think about that?" And I was like, "That's great. What about it?" You know. And he was like, "What do you think?" And I was like, "Well, it's cool. It's nothing that, you know, I was already doing that same style on the indies down south, you know, while they were wrestling up north." So, I mean, I was impressed with them, you know, but I wasn't shocked, you know. So he was, he invited me up. He said he talked to Paul Heyman, and I'd been tag teaming with Ricky Morton a lot and doing a lot of stuff on my own. And, you know, my name and art starting to get out there a little bit. And Paul heard about me, and when I came in, and they gave me a match, and that was pretty much it. And then I was only there like a year the first time, and then kind of went back doing indies and did a few WWE things, you know, house shows and stuff like that, a couple of WCW stuff, and then I finally went back to ECW in like 98 and stayed for 2 years till they, about 2.5 years till they closed.
Now, actually, you just kind of touched down on a couple of our listener questions that were sent in. One of our listeners wanted to know, did you enjoy your time as David Jericho?
What that?
One of our listeners wanted to know if you enjoyed your time as David Jericho.
Yeah, well, that was my first gimmick. I was David Jericho from 1990, you know. That was the only name I'd used forever. And I didn't change the name until like 1999. And that was ECW's doing, not mine.
Now, yeah. You know, the other listener question that we had, and you kind of touched on it as well, was WWF. And it was, what do you recall from your WWF tag team match versus Too Cool where you broke both your ankles? What went wrong leading to the injury is part two of that question.
So whenever you're taking that move, there was a top rope Frankensteiner. When you're taking that move, you know, of course, the guy taking it has to hold on, you know, at first, but he also has to eventually let go. And that was it. I think it was either Brian or Scott. I think it was Scotty Taylor. Scotty Too Hotty. He was the one I was doing it to, and he just didn't let go of my legs. And when I came around, my feet were already flattened out. And, it hurt me, but it hurt him too. You know, he hurt his neck and shoulder there. So I think he was kind of like on the shelf for a couple of weeks after that. But, yeah, he came down and upside down and flattened both of my ankles right out, broke both of them right there.
Ouch.
We finished the match, though. I mean, I got up and was going to do a few things, but my legs wouldn't even hold me up. So I collapsed. And then Brian kind of took over from there. And he did the general spot and took over, and we finished the match. And then iced my feet down a little bit, got paid, and then drove home.
Now, my co-host, Andrew, has a couple of questions for you. So, Andrew, go ahead.
Yeah, hey, Kid Cash. You re-debuted in ECW in 1999 using the name Kid Cash. Whose idea was the name?
Actually, it was 1998, and I was David Jericho when I debuted again back in ECW.
My mistake. I apologize.
Yeah, 99 is whenever they came out with Kid Cash.
Okay. Whose idea was that name?
You know, honestly, I think it was Joey Styles. It said something about me looking like Kid Rock. And Paul Heyman and Tommy Dreamer, they were all, I think they were producing the show at Paul's house. And I think they just said, you know what, that's a great idea. Let's do it. I showed up to work the very first day. Tommy comes to me and says, hello, David Jericho. How are you today? And I was like, I'm fine. How are you? He goes, great. And he walks away, but then he turns around and comes back and he says, oh, by the way, you're no longer David Jericho. You are now Kid Cash because you and Kid Rock look alike. And then he just walked away. So that's how it all became. So I've heard that Paul came up with it. I've heard that Joey Styles came up with it. And I've also heard that Tommy Dreamer came up with the name. So I really don't know.
Just don't remember. On August 26, 2000, you defeated Rhino for the ECW television title. Do you have any memories on winning that?
Yeah, I won it. I remember winning it in Hammerstein Ballroom. It was pretty cool. Van Dam was involved. We did like this big, got everybody in the ring. Everybody's fighting to clear the dress room out, you know, even though it was supposed to be a match between me and Rhino. And did the big dive out to the ring, out to the floor, took the big gore, cut like a whole 360 flip on it. And then, Van Damme came out, did a little something, and then he gave him, I believe, a frog splash, and I gave him a leg drop simultaneously. And that's a big night, yeah. It's not every day you get to win the ECW World Television title.
Right. Now, what led you to leaving ECW, and if you could share a couple of your thoughts on Paul Heyman?
I'm sorry, one more time.
I'm sorry. What led to you leaving ECW, and if you could you share a couple of your thoughts on Paul Heyman?
What led to me leaving ECW?
Right.
They called me up and said there's no more ECW, and I was getting offers from WCW. And, I mean, they called me and told me, but I did kind of leave prematurely before the word had gotten out and said that ECW was absolutely no longer, you know. Everybody was waiting it out because I was under a contract, you know, so I couldn't just get up and leave. So I contacted Paul Heyman, and Paul was like, I'm really cool about everything. I signed over any amount of money that I owed, that they owed me or anything like that, nothing else, you know, that was it, just signed over what they owed me on my contract, because, you know, of course, they were having hard times, and I still had time left on my contract, so I just signed it over to Paul, and that was that. He let me go clean and free. He never screwed me over on any money. I was always paid. They treated me very well, and if it wasn't for Paul Heyman, there would not definitely be a Kid Cash.
Okay, you mentioned that you went from there to going into WCW, which actually leads into my next question. You were in there for a short time before Vince McMahon and WWE
right.
bought out. Do you have any memories from that short time? I believe it was only a week or two you were there before they got bought out.
What? It was about two or three weeks. I think it was 3 weeks. I had literally just signed with them, and it was a I was very happy with the deal and everything, and was very content with it. And I did a couple of dark matches, and then I did a Nitro. No, it was a Thunder. I think I did a Thunder. And I got the weekly schedule for that week, and when I went home, I got a phone call from John Laurinaitis and said that just don't worry about coming down. They're only going to have a few people on the show. Something else was going on. And so I watched the show and then come to find out that they bought the company. Then a week later, I got another call from John Laurinaitis and said he's going to work for WWE, that they wanted to keep me, but they didn't really need all of that manpower. So they wanted to renegotiate the contract, and the renegotiation was pretty, you know, I was losing a good bit of money off of what I signed for, you know, and I was losing a good bit of TV time because they wanted me to go to Cincinnati for Heartland Wrestling and just kind of waiting until they called me. And I was, you know, talked to a couple of people about it, you know, and had an agent at the time, even had a lawyer that I kept, you know, talking to a lot, and we just discussed everything, and it just wasn't something that I was looking to go through. So I took a chance and left, and technically didn't even really need the release, but got one verbally anyway, and then I went to TNA.
So in that short time that you were in WCW, you hear a lot of horror stories about the locker room atmosphere. What was it like for you?
You know what? I'd already been around a little bit, and everybody already knew me. Same with WWE. A lot of people already knew where I came from. They knew that I paid my dues, you know. We're such a dying, you know, me and a few of select other people, we're kind of like a dying breed of wrestlers now, you know. So nobody ever gave me a hard time. I saw, you know, in every dressing room you have the dickheads, you know, and the assholes. I saw the dickhead and the assholes of the WCW, you know, so just like any other dressing room, really. And, but nobody ever messed with me, so I never had any problems.
Okay. But you previously said that after you left WCW, you go into TNA. That was the next time that we saw you. Real early on, you won the X Division Championship from Sonny Siaki. What are your memories of that night and memories of working with Sonny Siaki?
I remember Sonny Siaki and I are cool people, but we just don't mix in the ring. we don't flow very well. He tries to be a different style of a wrestler than what his body, his size is. He doesn't really, he just doesn't, we just don't have the same philosophy. So therefore, sometimes it was hard to have good matches with him. But he was a good base man because I did some high flying and he was big enough and strong enough to, really pull the move out good, make it look really good. So, I mean, he's talented. I mean, you can't take anything away from the guy. We just didn't flow.
Okay, and also while you're in TNA, you won the NWA Tag Team titles with Dallas, I believe twice. What were your memories of teaming with Dallas? Did you get along with him well?
Yeah, Dallas is a great kid, man. Lance, he was just ready to learn. He was young. He'd been out a little bit, already out in Texas and stuff. I mean, so he knew a little bit, and I just kind of like helped refine him a little bit, just try to, fine tune him a bit. And he did very well. He always listened. He was just a great guy. And, he tried very, very hard. I like that about him. He was always thinking, always had something in his mind he wanted to try and wanted to do. But it was, he would run it by me first and because he respects, the time and, that I put in the business and what I've done so far, So we always got along really good, honestly. He was a good kid, and I hope I think he's in WWE now. I'm not really sure, but if he is, I think if they just be patient with him, he's definitely going to be good. They're going to have to get something out of him.
Yeah, he is in WWE. He's teaming with Curt Hawkins right now. Also with TNA, they're getting ready to do the Hardcore Justice pay-per-view. Have you been contacted? And if so, will you be appearing at that pay-per-view?
I'm not sure. I don't know. You never know what's going to happen. I've talked to a few people from the office, and we're still talking, I mean, what happened with it's not like me coming in like anybody else, it's me, Kid Cash, and TNA, we had a little bit of a history, it's going to have to be a little bit of talking and a little bit of understanding, before we can work together again. And I think we're on that path and on that road. But I don't know. I probably wouldn't say this soon out. When is the pay-per-view? Like August, what?
August 8th.
Next weekend.
Yeah, I'm sure that they probably already have that show written out by now, I mean, it's just next week.
They're still actually contacting people, believe it or not.
Well, I mean, I've talked to a few people, but like I said, we need to do more talking than just accepting, pay-per-views. So I take one day at a time, and if they want me to do something like that, it'd be great. If not, I mean, I still don't hold any hard feelings with anybody, and who knows? I still do my thing, I do my MMA stuff. I do a lot of European traveling, doing seminars and all kinds of other stuff. So I'm pretty good.
Well, at least on my part, I'd love to see you on the pay-per-view. I do believe we have a couple callers. If you're cool, can we go ahead and take them?
Sure.
All right,
now,
Andrew, go ahead and talk to people.
Our first caller, actually, since he knows you, a guy named Nathan Brooks from the North Carolina area, so I'm going to put him through.
Okay.
And hello, Nathan, can you hear me? Hey, Nathan, are you still here?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hey, Kid Cash. I was trained by the same guys you were trained by. The reason I have a question for you, man.
You were trained by the Rock and Roll Express?
Yes, sir, I was.
Really? Okay. I'll have to ask Ricky. And what's your name?
My given name or wrestling name?
Well, your wrestling name, I guess, yeah.
Nathan Brooks.
Nathan Brooks, okay. Yeah, I just talked to Ricky actually yesterday, today. I'll have to call him.
I mean, I was one of the kids that was like really went between Tennessee, Georgia, and Kentucky. I was.
Uh-huh. Okay, cool. What's up, man?
Yeah, I was just wondering, you ever felt like you could give more to the business or, I mean, like be a trainer or anything like that?
I do. I train. I do, like, seminars, man. I have, like, a little tour that I do overseas. I'll go to Europe and do about sometimes up to like a little over a month. I'll do like a couple of weeks in one city, like, you know, in England or something. Then I'll leave there and then go do another week in another country and another week in another country, you know, at these wrestling schools that are already established. I just throw in a different style of, you know, of training. I do a lot of MMA style training with my wrestling training. So these people are getting something I've never seen before.
The reason I was asking is because my given name is Daniel, and I was trained probably, like, not by him. It was like how you were trained a little bit, but I was pushed through because they thought, well, you're a big dude. You can do more stuff for us as a as a heel, and now I can't do the business because I've had bad health, and I mean, I was pushed from guys that, that knew the business, and then I learned it, and then they would just have me out as like as an announcer or a referee.
Right.
And I remember meeting you as a kid coming to North Carolina with the Rock and Roll Express.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
I mean, you were like, I think you were like as their son or something, as a gimmick.
Ricky, yeah.
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 I was. You came to a small high school called West Carter High School, and that's where I met you guys.
Oh, cool.
Back in, I'm just saying that's how I met you, and that's how I was trained
right.
by some of the
Okay,
I'm
cool.
It's been
a while back,
huh? Yeah.
What's
that?
Thank you for calling in, man.
Thanks.
Hey, man, take care.
Thanks, man.
All right, Andrew, any more calls?
Yeah, we have a couple more calls. First one is someone from the chat room, Canada Spaceman, is really interesting. Somebody put in for it. Hey, Canada Spaceman, you're on.
Holy moly, am I on?
Yes, sir.
Holy moly. I can't believe I'm talking to Kid Cash. Awesome.
What,
I can't believe
what up?
Yeah, long time fan here, man.
Well, cool, man.
I'm going to, I know you're probably sick of talking about it, but I'm going to be talking, asking a little bit about the ECW days. You know, back then, when they brought the gimmick to you, did you guys ever like meet up with Kid Rock, and did he ever give did? Okay, so did he give you the kudos? He gave you the go.
I didn't need
like,
it because, well, honestly, I didn't need it because honestly, at that time he was barely getting started. You know what I'm saying? He was, you know, he'd been out there a while, but he hadn't even been known yet. So technically, you know, I pulled out the name before he got kind of famous, you know. I was already on TV and all that other stuff. But, yeah, we used to hang with Joe C. a lot. And then through Joe C., I met him actually a few times, and he was always really nice to me. Never had a problem with me being Kid Cash, being in the same room, him being Kid Rock. I mean, we had cordial conversations, you know. I mean, he was always a cool dude to me, and I was a cool dude back, and, you know, he would have gotten out of line. I would have probably, like, knocked shit out of him, you know what I'm saying? Because I didn't really know anything about him then. We just basically used the name. I mean, it's Kid Cash. My name is literally David Cash, you know, so I can be Kid Cash if I want to be, you know. the only difference was I had long hair. And Paul wanted me to dress like that. And then his album came out, had Bob with a Bye on it. And that's what Paul had chose to use for my ring entrance. So the only thing I had to get any kind of anything about him that I had to get him to agree to was using the music. Because it could be a copyright, you know, problem and stuff like that, you know, because I was using his,
right.
You know, because they would sit out, they were planning a DVD, you know, a DVD of the ring music and stuff like that, and that would have been on it, and, you know, I'm sure somebody would have wanted a royalty or a merchandise or something on it. But that was the only thing. Anytime I was around him, he was, hey, what's up? He called me Dave, and I called him Bob. You know, that was it. I mean, I didn't call him Kid Rock, and he didn't call me Kid Cash. Every now and then, they'd be like, what up, Kid Cash? And I'd be like, what up, KK? You know, KR. You know, wasn't like we hung out a lot, you know. It was only about maybe four or five times throughout the time I was in ECW. And Joe C. hung out with him a lot. He was the dwarf that ran with him for a while. He died and stuff like that, but he was really tight with Justin Credible, Rob Van Dam, and myself, and, you know, and a few other people. So it was sort of the 420 click, man. You know, we were the only ones who smoked pot. So.
Hold on a second. Were you involved in adult films with Joe C.?
No. I was only involved with getting high from time to time with some weed. He would come to the show. He was a huge wrestling fan, so he would come to the shows if we were up near the, you know, the Michigan area or the Ohio, up northern Ohio area, sometimes Chicago, and he would come hang out with us. Great guy.
The first time I seen you was on ECW Hardcore TV. It's like somebody just told me, it's like, you got to see this stuff. It's like incredible. And I couldn't get it except on rabbit ears off of like a Buffalo TV station. Like, I live in Canada, so it was pretty hard to get.
Oh,
and one of the first shows I seen was you. And at the end of the show was you getting busted wide open, your mouth bloodied and everything. And the show ended with you just like you hanging off the ropes and just like getting dummied. I'm like, oh, my God, what is this? And who is this guy? It's like, oh, my God, this is incredible. You know, I'm just like, this guy's taking bumps. Major, and he got dummied, and it's just like he's still going, and he looks like he's just about to get up, but he's getting pushed down not to go any further, and it's just like, it blew my mind, you know. It's like that was the first impression I got of him. I'm just like, I gotta know who this guy is.
Oh, cool. I get it. ECW, it would get a little. It was more rough than WCW and WWE. Those kind of companies. So we expected black eyes, cracked noses, and cheekbones. I broke a lot of bones in ECW while I was there. Broke a fibula in my leg, tore my ankle a couple times, broke my jaw, broke an orbital socket, broke my nose. Broke a few bones there in ECW, man. Knocked out a tooth.
In some wrestling magazines I bought back then around 2001, 2002, they were saying Jazz was like your helper. It's like she looked after you. It's like, how far does that go? Like, can you expand on what they were talking about?
No. Well, Jazz and I were just really cool friends and stuff like that, so they saw that. We didn't, you know, it wasn't anything like romantic or anything. We were just great friends. We traveled a lot together, you know, cutting the cost on vehicles and stuff. And, you know, we were all just, you know, you hung with your kind, you know what I'm saying? That's just, there was little cliques. You had to, you know, she was from Louisiana, I'm from Tennessee, you know, so we, you know, of course, smoke weed and I from, you know, so did she. So we just hung with who we were hanging with, you know, and Jazz and I just got along great. So there was a few times that I did run-ins on her matches to save her from Simon Diamond. She helped out me and Nova a few times whenever Nova and I was doing a little bit of tag teaming. You know, we went. I think we did a Living Dangerously pay-per-view maybe, or Danger.
Yeah.
Something.
Yeah, Living Dangerously 2000.
Yeah, I had a broken jaw. Yeah.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite.
think it was in Birmingham, Alabama. But she was in the mat, you know, we doing run-ins and stuff like that on each other led up to that night, the pay-per-view. Unfortunately, I had a broken jaw with my jaw wired shut, so I had just broken it like two nights before up in Atlanta.
Has that happened more than once? Wired, your jaw wired shut?
Yeah, that's the first time I ever had a wired shut, yeah. But it was a pretty decent break. It broke on two sides of my face, so they had to wire it shut.
I don't know if you've heard this, but it's like for about 8 years, I've been like, you know, whenever I've spoken my mind on radio shows and the internet, I said, like, the most ultimate match I've ever want to see is you versus Billy Kidman. It's like, I thought he was like the best of the best of like the guys jumping off the top ropes, and I thought you were about the same from the indies, you know, like ECW was an indie pretty much back then. And it's like, did you guys ever have a match, or did you ever want to have a match with him?
I've known Billy for years and years, and we get along great. He's a sweet guy. I've never wrestled him, and we've talked about it. We even wondered why, you know, that it's a wonder, as long as both of us had been in the business, that we never ran across each other and actually ever had to wrestle each other. And if you think about it, ECW wasn't really an independent there. We were actually beating WCW at one point in the ratings, and we were selling out more in the house, you know, houses on the house shows. So technically, it wasn't an indie show. We were definitely the third company. You know, I don't think anybody can deny that. But he was doing his thing in WCW, and I was doing my thing in ECW. And I don't think at the time WWE had anybody at that time. I think they had Taka Michinoku. And that's so we were like the high-flying guys of our companies, you know, which would have been a really cool thing, you know, if we'd ever would have faced off back then at, when we were, you know, both kind of like the flyboys of our companies. I think it would have been a big deal.
Okay, sorry. I didn't mean to insult you or nothing, you know.
No, you're all right. But listen, that company, even to this day, you can't say that anybody cannot say that ECW was an independent show. Even to this day, I mean, WCW tried it, WWE tried it, and even TNA has tried it on an occasion and is going to try it again to bring back the ECW. So evidently, it must have been something bigger than just an independent show. That, I mean, Ring of Honor's been out there for a long time, but did they ever get the recognition, or, you know what I'm saying, that the ECW got and still get?
ROH comes close to getting that flavor back, but TNA's closer. But it's like if you and all the other guys
Ring
that made
Honor,
a name.
Well, honestly, unless Ring of Honor gets a lot of money back in it, it'll never be anything better than just a top-notch independent show. I've seen the shows. I've seen the tapes. It only fits a cult set of, you know, kind of like CW did. We had a cult following, but then it went from a cult following to a nationwide and worldwide following. Okay, Ring of Honor is still on that cult following thing, you know. And TNA at that time when it opened up, it had a cult following. That's back when we were just doing pay-per-views once a week, every Wednesday. It got that following, it got that cult following, and then people started talking and talking. You must be a fan of Ring of Honor, which is understandable, but you also got to remember there's about a billion more people in this world that don't look at Ring of Honor and doesn't look at, you know, a lot of those type of places as, you know, legit companies, really.
Yeah, but the thing is,
it's
just like
your opinion, and you're a mark for the Ring of Honor, and a mark for some of this other shit. Doesn't mean the rest of the world is with you on it, you know.
I know, but it's like I've loved WWF, you know, for so many years, and it's just like I got sick of it. Now I look at other stuff, and I'm like, wow, this is what I remember what wrestling is supposed to be.
Well, I've watched it too, and honestly, I would, even though I don't really watch wrestling that much anymore, I haven't for years, I would much rather watch WWE before I would watch Ring of Honor. Ring of Honor has absolutely no psychology whatsoever, has not announced a story to it at all. Only thing it is move for move for move for move. That is not impressive. What's impressive to me is to go out and do two or three high flying moves and make them actually mean something. Okay? And don't finish with a move that is less intense as the moves that you were doing and kicking out of.
Okay, yes, I've heard that before, that Ring of Honor is called Spotfest.
That is all it is. I mean, I respect people who get up in the ring. It takes balls to do what we do, okay? It does.
Well, you've been known to be...
There are a lot of people who can just do a move but actually have no talent. Do you understand that?
Yes, but you've been known to do that too. You've been compared to Jeff Hardy. It's like you're like one of the best.
I am one of the best. I've been one of the best. And honestly, think about it. If you watch the ECW from today, there's nobody that can do a couple of those moves, and they haven't even attempted to do a few of those moves that I did back in the day. Okay? And you probably won't ever see it. But you didn't see me go out there and do 50 freaking moves and kick out of 100 of them. You see what I'm saying? I did three moves tops, and the rest of it I wrestled. See, I gave the crowd a little bit of everything, man. I gave them a little bit of story. I gave them a real fucking character. And then I also sold my ass out for them. I did arm drags. I did hip tosses, you know, other than just doing fucking power bombs off the top ropes into a hurricanrana, out of the ring, over the top ropes, duck this clothesline, duck that clothesline, drop down. You know, I didn't do that, man. I put a pace to the match. I made sense to the match, and I gave something for the crowd to fucking cheer for, you know, as far as high flying on top of it. I gave them a full damn match, dude. So, no, I didn't do what they do.
Okay, I got to go, but last question. You bulked up a lot after ECW and before you joined WWF, WWF. Do you recommend weight gain powders, shake powders?
I recommend anything that's going to give you what you want.
Okay, thanks.
Okay.
Cheers.
All right, mate.
Okay, thank you. Anyway, sorry about that. I have a couple more questions, then we have one last caller. You know, I want to talk a little bit about WWE with you, since, of course, you did, you know, you left TNA and then went into WWE.
Right.
Of course, you know, you actually did the debut at the ECW One Night Stand where you actually were one of the many run-ins during the event. What are your memories of that night?
I remember that night just being a total clusterfuck. as far as, you know, being told what we were originally going to do to what we wound up doing. You know, I was actually supposed to wrestle Stevie Richards. And I think it was him and I did a match a long time ago in November to remember, and we really tore the house down, so they wanted another one of those. We wound up working each other, then it went to like a 20-minute match, then it went down to a 15-minute match, a 5-minute match, and then it wound up being just me running out, diving off the ropes like I did when I won the TV title. They wanted that last memory kind of thing, you know?
Wow.
Yeah. So and Vince McMahon was not supposed to even be there. It was supposed to be completely run by Paul Heyman, Tommy Dreamer, and Van Damme, and a few others from the original crew. But Vince showed up. It was his company. He could do whatever the hell he wanted to do, and he did. And he even put some of the – I think he basically rewrote the show, too.
Wow.
I've never heard that before.
Doesn't surprise me. Now, what are your memories of your feud with the Mexicals?
I've known those guys for years. I always had a good time with them. Super Crazy is a very sweet guy. Known him for years. Psychosis, same way. I mean, Psychosis and I have had some really, really great matches from even down in Mexico to ECW to WWE to even some indies. And with Super Crazy, the same way. Wrestled him in Puerto Rico a bunch, a few times in Mexico, a lot in ECW. and a lot in WWE, and I've never had a bad match with any of them.
Now, for a while, you and Jamie Noble were known as the Pitbulls. Whose idea was that, and were you against it or all for it?
I was against it originally, but it was making me money at the time. So, you know, of course, a little discretionary with Gary Wolf and the original Pitbulls from ECW, but that was the ECW Pitbulls, and we were the WWE Pitbulls. I think there was a discrepancy with the name, who owned the name. And the reason it came about is I was actually the cruiserweight champion, and they put us in a three-way one night. I think it was Paul London, me and Jamie. No, actually, it was a four-way. It was Paul London, Brian Kendrick, and me and Jamie. This is before me and Jamie even tagged. But Jamie and I were a lot alike. We were, you know, our styles are a lot alike. I just do more high flying, and he does a lot more technical type of wrestling. But we're both very aggressive. I like it aggressive. Anybody who wrestles me, I tell them to lay it in. I mean, because I'm definitely going to lay it in on you, you know. And but I'm not trying to kill anybody. I just get out there and do my thing. I like it rough. I mean, I always have, and I think I sell it a lot more. And I think if you're getting it rough, you sell it better, you know. So
oh, yeah.
You can make it more believable, too, you know.
Mm-hmm. So I would agree with you.
Yeah. So Vince McMahon was watching us do this four-way, and he just saw pit bulls in both of us. So when we were done with the match, I was standing in the back talking to Jamie, and very seldom Vince McMahon ever gets up from his seat from watching the monitor. When the show is going, he doesn't move, you know. But he got up, him and John Laurinaitis came to the back and stopped us walking down the hallway talking and said, guys, he goes, when I watch you two, I see two dogs. He goes, two pit bulls, two Dobermans. You know, he goes, you guys are just vicious. And he goes, and that's what I like to see. He goes, if you don't mind, he goes, would there be a problem, you know, if we take the Cruiserweight title off of you? And I was like, absolutely not. And he was like, would you be, I want you two guys to tag team. So that's how we did it.
Nice.
And we were a tag team from that moment on, actually. I lost the belt like 2 weeks later. Yep, that was about it, yeah.
Nice. Now, you know, I just have one more question for you before I go ahead and kick it over to our next caller. And that's, do you have any ribs or road stories you can share with our listeners?
Any ribs or road stories?
Yes.
I wasn't in the car, but I was in the car behind the car because it kind of got on our car and stuff. But anyway, back in the day, nowadays, Taz is a really cool dude. He is, you know, he's much more laid back than he used to be. But back in the day, Taz tended to be a little pissy, you know. He would get a little bit of, pissy on people, man. He would just, you know, just always bitching and griping and shit, right? One thing back in the day, as far as paying your dues and stuff, it was always a veteran's idea to never pull over the car unless you had to get gas. So if you had to use the bathroom, then you're shit out of luck. You know, so what we did is we always got big gulps, and we got, like, really big cups. So if we were ever in a situation to where we had to use the bathroom, urinate while we were on the road and we weren't near close to, you know, being empty on gas, then we just usually did our little job in the cup, right, and throw it out the window. Well, Taz was bitching and griping. He wanted to use the bathroom. He had to pull over and pull over and pull over. He had to pee and this and that. So Tommy Dreamer would not pull over. And, Tommy was in the passenger seat, and I think Spike Dudley was in the driver's seat. And how did it go? Oh, yeah. All the talk about peeing made Tommy have to pee, so he used the bathroom in a big gulp cup. And it's hot outside. It's summertime, so we're driving all down the road. I'm following him, and next thing I know is I see a cup flying out the side window, and it got all over our car, and it not only got on our car, but it went out the driver's door, I mean the passenger door window in the front seat, and circled back around into the passenger seat and went all over Taz. And it was hilarious.
That's funny.
So if you can ever be thinking about that happening to you, put yourself in that situation and see how you would feel. And if you were watching that situation from afar, then you would be laughing your ass off just like we are.
That is hilarious.
Like
now,
we did. Yeah.
Now we're going to go ahead and kick to our next caller, and then we'll go ahead and wrap this up. So caller, go ahead.
Hello?
Hello, caller.
Hey, how's it going, Cash?
Great. What's up, dude?
What part of Tennessee are you from, man?
I'm originally from Virginia, but I've lived in Tennessee since 1990. I've lived in Johnson City, Tennessee, and I've been living in Nashville, Tennessee, since about 2002.
Yeah, I used to work over in Pigeon Forge a little bit.
Oh, okay, I got you. Yeah, near Knoxville.
Yeah. Two quick questions that I won't try not to repeat the last Canadian caller. Got to love the Canadians, just not the sharpest knives in the cutlery set.
No, but they're cool to talk to.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. Two quick questions. First question, talk about the locker room. Are there clear leaders? Are there clear badasses? Is there a hierarchy?
Yep.
Or do people kind of do their own thing? And second
TNA
question.
Wasn't like
go ahead.
That. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. TNA wasn't like that. They didn't really have the higher hierarchy was Jeff Jarrett, you know, but he was never in the dressing room, you know. He had his own little office. I mean, TNA had like cliques. You had your little groups that you hung out with. WWE has his hierarchy, and ECW had their hierarchy too. So, yeah, there was badasses in those dressing rooms, and I think in TNA I was really the only badass, really, you know, at that time.
Cool.
Right now you got Kurt Angle and you got Bobby Lashley, and you know, so those guys can be some pretty badasses if they wanted to be. You know, I know for a fact Bobby can, and I know for a fact Van Dam can. So yeah, but back then there wasn't those guys there. It was only just like me, and I think honestly, legitimately, and I would put my name on the line here, was that I was probably the only legitimate fighting wrestler that was in the dressing room. WWE, you had me, Jamie Noble, you had God Almighty, you had Undertaker, Benoit at the time, even Guerrero was a little badass. You know, of course, you also had your dickheads. Even though JBL was a badass, he was also a dickhead because he fucked with everybody, and you know. So, but
right.
You know, he was part of the hierarchy, so he could do it.
All right.
You know.
Last question.
Undertaker ran everything.
That's what I hear. Last question. It's been a great show, guys. Awesome show. Talk about the women, the ladies. What goes on backstage with the women? And I'll hang up and listen. Thank you.
Depends on which one you're messing with. There's some women with class, and then there's some women with absolutely none. So it really depends on which one you're talking about. There's some big ass whores in this business, but yet there are some big true ladies in the business.
Definitely. And I want to thank all the callers who've called in. You know, one last thing. Do you have anything you'd like to plug to our listeners before we go ahead and wrap this up?
Oh, well, I'm always plugging something anyway. I'm just my websites and everything. I'm got a couple of shows coming up. I'll be working with Jerry Lawler soon, talking to a few other people, doing seminars, you know, just things like that. Working with a new girl as a valet. Her name's Tiffany. She's from up, I think, in Louisville, Kentucky, kind of like a me and Trinity kind of a deal. So I think that's going to work out pretty good. Probably not on everything, but just on some stuff. Working overseas and stuff coming up at the end of September for, I believe, 1PW and Future Shock. That's about it.
Definitely. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming on and joining us tonight, and hopefully we'll see you in TNA soon.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye.
All right, fans, you have just heard ECW original Kid Cash live on False Count Radio, and stay tuned, we're going to have another episode tonight featuring ECW original Balls Mahoney. Man, what did you think of that interview? Lots of great callers and a lot of good questions from them, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, it was a great interview. And he was very...
open.
He was very open. So.
Yes, he was, you know, and doing these interviews, you got to have patience with your callers, and, you know, he had very good patience when it came to the callers, and, you know, hopefully, like I said, we'll see him at the TNA Hardcore Justice pay-per-view on August 8th, you know, but with that being said, I think we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. On behalf of the Outsider, Andrew Carluck, I am the Pacific Coast Player, JT Evans, inviting you to check out falsecountradio.com and check out all future interviews that False Count Radio has to offer. With that being said, let's go ahead and hit an outro.